It's perfect. It's perfect. I love those words. I like to hear them. It feels good to say them. I almost said it after the choir finished singing. It was perfect. It touches some deep place of satisfaction in me. You've probably even heard me say it as I appreciate some things or others around here. I don't even do it consciously. Maybe you do it yourself. But seeking perfection, consciously or not, particularly when it comes to ourselves, is a double-edged sword. Last week, we were talking about not having enough, feeling like we need more and want to spend more money, time, things, all the time. This week is about the feeling of not being enough, or rather, what it might feel like to know we are enough, just as we are. No perfecting required. This being enough, it's an interesting question for me. My Protestant heritage runs deep in my being. Even in spite of the fact that my family was never actively religious, there is something in that value system that strikes a deep chord in me. Somewhere, somehow, I long to have everything neatly lined up in rows. My emails, my books, my friends. All right, not my friends exactly. But there is some part of me that wants things together, wants them in line, details taken care of, everything in its place. I kind of know this is a losing battle. It's just not possible to organize everything and keep it that way. And when I'm really honest, it's a losing battle in more ways than one. I think there may be ways I lose too. Years ago, I read this little story from spiritual teacher Ram Dass, and like a pebble in my shoe, it's stuck in my mind ever since. Here's what he wrote. God and Satan were walking down the street one day, and the Lord bent down and picked something up. He gazed at it, glowing radiantly in his hand. Satan, curious, asked, "What's that?" "This," answered the Lord, "is truth." "Here," replied Satan as he reached for it, "let me have that. I'll organize it for you." When I first read that, I thought, what? Organizing is the work of the devil? You've got to be kidding me. Do you know how hard I have worked to get organized? I'm sure it's a spiritual strength. Don Miguel Ruiz of the Four Agreements talks about being impeccable. The Buddhists talk about placing things mindfully. The Christians talk about how cleanliness is next to godliness, and I'm sure they mean tidiness too. So you can see how that's a puzzling parable. If tidiness is next to godliness, being organized has got to be good. I think it's particularly stuck with me because I have worked so hard to get organized. And then I have to wonder, was it for good? I've talked before here about when I was younger, I was not the most fastidious of the bunch. For years, in my 20s and early 30s, I had a room in my apartment affectionately labeled the junk room. And it wasn't small, and it really was full of stuff I didn't particularly want or need. Just ask my niece about it. She still claims that some of her impressively disorderly teenage habits were born of witnessing that particular room at the tender age of 3 and 4 and 5. And the fact is, that room was an improvement over how things had been before. At least there, the mess was in one place. I'll just leave it right there. I've never been much of a planner either. My mom would laugh if she heard me say that, because the truth is that I was the antithesis of a planner. I was the anti-planner. If something could be postponed, I would postpone it. If a task could be procrastinated, you could count on me to do just that. But somehow, in this last decade, maybe the last 15 years, I've changed. Bit by bit, I've realized that an uncluttered desk really is my preference. I've noticed I feel better when my papers and files are in order. I like the feeling of knowing what's coming up in the next weeks or months and knowing I've prepared for it. Don't get me wrong, I am not claiming that I am now a black belt planner. I am no organizational aficionado. I still forget things sometimes. I still miscalculate how much time things take, and I am far from perfect. But I am vulnerable, I have discovered, to perfectionism, to the endless allure of the ideal. I remember when I was a kid, I had seen my dad's books lying around with titles like In Search of Excellence and From Good to Great. And something about those titles and their promise of ever-increasing mastery and prowess and potential, they stuck with me. Not that I did anything about it at the time, but like a seed, ideas were planted. And I remember in my late teens, early 20s, this motto of work hard, play hard. Give your work and your play everything you've got. It was a new idea at the time. I didn't do much with that then either, but looking back, it was the beginning of what to me has seemed like a growing trend around me and then in me too. It's this idea that you can be better, stronger, smarter, and just generally more perfect than you've ever been before. And so can your kids. And we have an ever-expanding market for self-help books. We have life coaches. We have growth potential movements. We have a lot of ways to help you get there, wherever there is. As it happens, though, all this didn't start with the author of those books on my dad's coffee table. This whole inclination toward human perfection, it's old. Perfection, Jan Nielsen writes, is a theme that runs throughout the Jewish and Christian traditions. Some form of the word perfect appears nearly 130 times in the collection of the Hebrew and Christian scriptures we call the Bible. And a part in the evolution of that theme has been played by our very own Unitarian forebearers. In fact, you could say it was one of the defining elements of early American Unitarianism, this idea that we can change and improve ourselves. In the Puritan tradition out of which we came, they didn't believe that. They believed that only God could save a person, and that was predestined. All were broken. Can't even tell the difference between right and wrong. Nothing you could do to fix yourself is what they believed. But in the beginning of the 1800s, a minister named William Ellery Channing began preaching a different story. He and others like him said, "No, no, we know the difference between right and wrong. We can learn to grow and do better. We can be better. Salvation by character," they called it. Onward and upward forever was, you could say, a motto. And a decade after that, another early Unitarian published a book called On the Formation of Christian Character, the original self-help book, as my colleague Tom Belote calls it. Another 10 years later, a Unitarian named Ralph Waldo Emerson published a book in which he literally uses the term self-help. And soon other so-called self-help books begin to appear, just a few at first, and then more and more and more over time. While it's hard to know whether our faith began a movement or simply tapped into one already in motion, I find it interesting how connected we are to this idea of the continuity of human development, which has, however positively it was intended when our forebears promoted it, this idea has in recent decades taken on almost a life of its own. This idea of the always better, always in process, and its discouraging corollary, never, ever quite enough, just as we are. Kathleen Norris describes our modern predicament in her book, Amazing Grace. "Perfection is one of the scariest words I know," she writes. "It is a marked characteristic of contemporary American culture and a serious psychological affliction. It makes people too timid to take important risks and causes them to suffer when, although they've done the best they can, their efforts fall short of some imaginary and usually unattainable standard." She goes on to note that the pursuit of perfection distorts our thinking and our self-image and gets in the way of our emotional growth. She lifts up Martha Stewart as a kind of high priestess of this pursuit of the ideal, where one dare not let the mask slip, even in one's own home, where all is perfect, right down to the last hand-stenciled napkin ring. But there's good news. The word perfect, as used in the Christian scriptures, Norris says, is not a scary word necessarily, so much as a scary translation. The word that has been translated as perfect does not mean to set forth an impossible goal or the perfectionism that would have me strive for it at any cost. It is taken from a Latin word meaning complete, entire, full grown. To those who originally heard it, the word would convey mature rather than what we mean today by perfect. To be perfect, she concludes, is to make room for growth, for the changes that bring us to maturity, to ripeness. To mature is to lose adolescent self-consciousness so as to be able to make a gift of oneself as a parent, as a teacher, as a friend, as a spouse. It's a refreshing and reassuring take. To be perfect, to perfect ourselves, does not have to mean being always organized, always together, always impeccable, always in line, but instead can be about learning to make room for growth. And I wonder if the next stage in human development is, paradoxically, to put less emphasis on this ever-escalating call for human development. I wonder whether what comes next is not so much about increasing improvement as it is about increasing acceptance. Not so much about forever jacking up our potential, and more about learning to acclimate to what is, to who we are, to building a new relationship with reality and with each other. I even wonder if the countercultural history of our faith in particular calls us in that new direction. Our Unitarian ancestors stood against a mainstream theology they saw as hampering true evolution. What if we are called to do the same in our day? To step back from the incessant push for self-improvement and listen for a deeper story, a kinder story, a story with room for more complexity, more reality, more truth. Franciscan priest Richard Rohr writes that true perfection is the ability to include imperfection. And then there's the Navajo rug weavers. They have a tradition of always weaving a flaw into the corner of every rug as a reminder that we humans will never be perfect. It is right there, right in the imperfection, they say, that the spirit moves in and out of the rug. They call it the spirit thread. I think back to that parable about God finding a piece of truth and Satan wanting to organize it, perfect it, squeeze out potential for error, make it better or different than it already was. I wonder whether it's possible to organize things into such predictability that there's no room left for the holy, no room for the unexpected, for serendipity or grace. If everything is always perfect, and we're never vulnerable, we never get to experience the joy of being helped or supported when we fall. Now, don't get me wrong. I am not recommending disorganization as a path to some elusive greater holiness. I'm not saying we shouldn't plan. In fact, whatever planning and organizing skills I've gained over the course of my life have surely made it and me more effective, happier, and more able to be helpful to those around me. And I also know that an overfocus on getting things just so can blind me or any of us to the beauty of what already is. If we've got our eyes on the prize, we miss what's right in front of us. And when we're always looking to make things better, we cannot notice what's enough, that we are enough. Which leads me back to the question from the service description, from the very beginning of this hour together, which is, what if we knew we were enough? What would we do then? I asked a friend of mine, a successful professional woman in her 60s, who said, I'd have more confidence. I'd think less about myself and notice other people more. I think I would be more joyful in my relationships with other people, she said. I think of another friend of mine, a successful rabbi who, in an effort to be more present to his elementary age boys, chose to pull back on work. Together with his wife, who made a similar choice in her work, they moved to a smaller house in a less expensive neighborhood. They decided that that was enough, that they were enough without the titles, without the extra money. And for me, I think enough feels like fresh air, like an easing in my being, like, oh, I can relax. It's like trusting in what is. So what about you? What if you knew, even for one moment, that you were enough, just as you are right now? What if you didn't feel like you had to strive to be okay? What would that feel like? What would you stop doing? What might you start? We live in a world of more and more all the time, in every way. We're told we're not enough, and too often we believe it. But there is another way unfolding, a different message to embrace, compassion and acceptance, a thread of kindness through it all. May we listen for our path and remember Killian McDonald's words, Venus de Milo had no arms, even the Liberty Bell is cracked.